Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, September 7th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered in my over 47 years of doing therapy. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to help me turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon, and that will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often, because that usually provides an opportunity for them to ask questions or provide testimonials. And if you have comments, questions, or testimonials, you can call us at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it will put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or given powerful testimonials about how the active use of these tools is improving the quality of their lives. Also this year, we are doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons and the Course in Miracles experiment book by Pam Grout. So today's lesson 250, read simply, let me not see myself as limited. And then the commentary reads, let me behold the offspring of the Creator today and witness to their glory. Let me not try to obscure the holy light within them and see their strength diminished and reduced to frailty, nor perceive the lacks in them with which I would attack their sovereignty. They are your offspring, Father, and today I would behold their gentleness instead of my illusions. They are what I am, and as I see them, so I see myself. Today I would see truly that this day I may at last identify with them. and the Pam Grout Course in Miracles experiment book, lesson 250, is pulling up here on my Kindle. And it is titled, A Place of Joy, Abundance, Charity, and Endless Giving. Pam quotes A Course in Miracles as saying, it is with your thoughts, then, that we must work, if your perception of the world is to be changed. Pam writes, depending upon who you talk to, Tinder is A, the world's most popular dating app, B, an uber-easy scheme for hooking up, or C, a surefire recipe for rejection. Tinder is an app for viewing pictures of available humanoids. If you like the way they look, you swipe right. If not, you swipe left. I've worked harder putting on eyeliner. Either way, the direction you swipe is 100% up to you. So, then she goes on to say, like Tinder, A Course in Miracles tells me that I get to choose which feelings and thoughts to hook up with. I decide whether to embrace or reject the circumstances of my life. Why would any person swipe left? Lesson 250 encourages me to swipe right to pick pictures that make me happy and pictures that I would actually like to, quote, date, close quotes. So, let me not see myself as limited. Let me not see my brother and sister as limited. Let me see us as we actually are, which is offspring of the Creator and full of infinite potential and glory. So our caller number is 563-999-3581, and we have about 50 minutes to talk or field your comments or questions. And it always makes it easier for us to help make the show relevant when you give us a call and press 1. What's on your mind today? What would be of service? How could we discuss something that would be valuable to you today? I have, as I was mentioning yesterday, I've finished the book, The Emotion Code by Dr. Bradley Nelson, which contains one of the most, a knowledge base about how we hold energies. He'll call them trapped emotions. But we hold energies in our system that whenever they get resonated, they drive our behavior. They drive our perceptual process. They drive our behavior. And with the work, whether it's the Michael Rice Reality Management Worksheet or the Byron Katie Question Your Thoughts Worksheet or the Sedona Release Method or Ho'oponopono, as I work to identify and then release these unproductive emotions, or as the Diedrich Wolzak work would call me to think about it, the negative beliefs I've downloaded, the false beliefs I have about myself, as I work to identify and release those, it frees me up to experience life and from an entirely different perspective. And that's what we're here to assist people in doing. Find a way to get a body of work that you're willing to apply in your life to start improving your quality of life. Michael Rice and Jeannie make these tools available, and they will do just that. If you actively apply these tools in your life, they will improve the quality of your life. They will help you remove energies that don't belong in your system. And then what you get to deal with when you interact with life is life on life's terms. When you're not coming at it from your belief that you're not smart or that you're weak or that you're not talented or that you're not artistic or creative, if you're operating from those beliefs, everything you experience in life in one way or another will help you justify or validate that belief. It will help you convince yourself that you are not smart, that you are not creative, that you are not worthy. And if you don't actively work to dismantle those false beliefs, they will drive your behavior every time they're activated, every time they're resonated by life circumstances. So we encourage people to apply the tool. There's a tool that I'm not quite sure exactly how this came to being, but once upon a time, as I was working with the Tuesday support group, teaching Michael Rice's, at that point it was a 12-step worksheet that we were using, I had a very bright, very creative person attending the group on a regular basis, and she worked in a facility helping mentally and emotionally challenged patrons. And she loved the process of the worksheet, but she said, I get triggered by these people so often that I can't possibly duck into the broom closet and do a worksheet every time that happens. So she said, I need to have a shortcut. And so she created a 3-step process, and I think her 3-step process was simply when she realized she was upset, she'd ask herself what the emotion was and what the goal was, and then she'd cancel it. 1, 2, 3. And so she was asking for, you know, she would view me as an authority figure since I was, you know, running the group, and she was asking for permission. Is this okay? Will this work? And I just said, try it. Use it and see what results you get. And if it works, great, keep using it. And she said, oh, yeah, I've already been using it. It works great. And I said, all right, then no need to ask me. Is it okay? And then we had some other people who, you know, were quite resistant to Michael Rice changing from the 12-step to the 7-step, which is the current worksheet process. And then a whole bunch of people in my practice who would get thrown off by the 7-step model, which has so many words crammed on the page, it kind of looks like a tax form to most people. So I took the opportunity to create a 5-step worksheet that fit on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper with large font, easy to read, and it was 5 simple steps. And those steps were, anytime I notice I don't like how I'm feeling, I put an emotion word on it. Then I realize that my emotions are the shadows of my thoughts. So every time I have an emotion going, I must have been pouring my mind energy into a thought that would generate that emotion. So the step 2 is I ask myself, what thought am I using to create that emotion? And then take a breath. And then realize that every time I have a thought that's generating a negative emotion, that thought is going to contain a goal that's not getting met. So the 3rd step is I identify the goal that's in that thought that I'm using to generate the negative emotion. And so take a breath. Now I've got an emotion and a thought and a goal. And the 4th step is I simply take a breath and say, I cancel my thought and my goal, and I ask to be shown the hidden part of my own mind that's actually creating this upset. And then I take a breath and maybe take a breath or two and notice what I feel. Sometimes thoughts and images will pop into my head from an earlier time in my life. Sometimes I'll just feel blank. Sometimes the energy will shift. But then I just think a loving thought, the most loving memory I've got, and breathe into that. And then I scan my body and notice how I'm feeling. And that's the five steps. So that was the system that I used for quite a while, quite a number of years, to introduce people. And I introduced it and I wrote it up as the mental short version of the reality management worksheet, something that's there as I learn or when I don't have access to the full seven-step worksheet or the time to write out the whole worksheet process. Well, not too long ago, Susan Bingham came to me and said, hey, I've got this five-step worksheet, and I put your forgiveness pattern onto it. And I didn't know what five-step she was talking about. She apparently got a five-step worksheet process somewhere off of Michael Rice's website. And the forgiveness pattern is something that evolved over the years of the last 17 years of doing the Tuesday support group. And it's just a way to slow down in the release process, in the canceling goal, asking to be shown process, to make sure that I'm not trying to think my way to something. And I'm asking for something other than my conscious logical mind to help me gain an insight, reach some clarity, drop some baggage, etc. So Susan Bingham put this together with the five-step process that she had, and the current version of it reads as follows. Without a step involved, there's a statement that my feeling, whether it's anger, sadness, or frustration, is blank. So I write in the emotion, and then I write in my upset level from 1 to 10, 1 being very little upset and 10 being the worst. And then her number one reads, my lack of peace and well-being, parentheses, capital L, love, close parens, my lack of peace and well-being is caused by the thoughts I hold about this. And then there's a blank line and there's the words, my trigger, in parentheses. So it's a person or a situation, and I'm holding thoughts about them. So I identify my thoughts. And then, number two, since my reality comes from my own mind, it is my responsibility. And I ask that love be restored to my mind. To collapse my reality, a picture less than love, I locate and cancel my need for my trigger, mentioned in number one, to do this, whatever the goal is. And then in number three, she puts my forgiveness pattern into the middle of her worksheet. I ask that my true being, love, be restored to my awareness. I am willing to have my reality and its effects change. I want to be shown the truth. And to facilitate this, A, I cancel my need to be right. B, I cancel my need for anyone or anything to change, including myself. C, I put my conscious logical mind on the shelf for now. D, I cancel my specific goal for this wake-up sheet. E, I ask to be shown the hidden part of my mind that is creating the negative emotion presented in this wake-up sheet. And I take a few moments to breathe and ask to be shown what my logical mind cannot show me. So to do this, I F, place myself in that open, allowing state and watch whatever images come up. How old am I? Where am I? Who else is there? What is happening? I trust that whatever I see, however disjointed, is just what I need to see to begin to heal and move forward. Letter G, it is perfectly safe for me to see, feel, experience whatever comes up, questioning old conclusions about myself and anyone else, remembering that H, whatever comes up, is all old stuff. It's just nerves firing in my brain. This stuff cannot hurt me any more than it already has. And I keep repeating the idea that I cancel my need to be right, and I refuse to make up another story or image based on my brain content or my reality to prove that I'm right. And then, number four, my true source is love. I reconnect to that source and ask that I and my trigger both be restored to love. Number five, once I'm restored to love, I want to offer this trigger, my trigger, the loving energy, by creating a loving or enlightened goal that will be beneficial to both of us. And there's a blank space to write that in there. And then I'm assuming that the person would breathe and scan their body and notice what their upset level is and rate that again from 1 to 0. So the person has a check-in in the beginning with a rating from 1 to 10 and a check-in at the end with a rating from 1 to 10. So that's the worksheet as it currently sits from Susan Bingham's, wherever she originated that 5-step 1, blending my forgiveness pattern. And the one that I mentioned, the 5-step 1 that I mentioned, is available at mindshiftersacademy.org on the educational materials page. So hopefully this will spark some comments or questions. 563-999-3581. We have one person in the chat room, and we've got 6 callers. How can we support you today? What's on your mind? What comments or questions might you have about the worksheet process? I have a number of people that continually run into what they would call stuck points or a brick wall. And I had somebody in the office earlier today, and he was looking at a pattern in his family of origin, and the pattern in his family of origin was how both of his mother and father would constantly say no to each other. They were basically not in any kind of a healthy relationship pattern. They were a very, very traumatized and troubled marital couple. And so he was talking about the idea that he realizes that one of their biggest patterns was that they just constantly said no. But what he didn't understand was, until I pointed out to him, that that's something that he's very proud of in himself today. That he has defined it as the way to set good boundaries and to keep himself safe from intrusions and to limit how much intimacy he has. And this is the issue. We are all blind to our own issues, which is why tools are so important. Because any tool worth the paper it's written on or the breath it takes to speak it will help me bypass my conscious logical mind, which for most of us here in the Western culture is what we use to do and to decide whatever it is we're going to do in our lives. We rely on our conscious logical mind to try and sort things out, figure them out, point out to ourselves how we're right and the world is wrong, etc. Tool, any good tool, will help me bypass that system. So there are tools that involve testing the energy system, doing applied kinesiology, Psyche, P-S-Y-C-H, K hyphen K is one system that's very much like the neuroemotional technique, which is another system, which is very much like the bioenergetic synchronization technique, which is very much like the others. And it's very much like the Emotion Code by Dr. Bradley Nelson, which is a book you can purchase and learn to do this for yourself. And the idea is any of these tools, like the Reality Management Worksheet or any of the tools that I just listed, the primary benefit that I see in these tools is they help me bypass the conscious logical mind, which is only always and forever going to keep reinforcing the thought process that has created my mental and emotional upset to begin with. So whatever tool you like, pick up a tool and start applying it to your own mental and emotional process. And the more the tool you use helps you bypass your conscious logical mind and either has you journaling or asking for assistance or meditating, doing a creative visualization or reading your energy system to get answers, the more that is involved, my personal experience has been the better the results you'll get. Because the conscious logical mind, or what some would call the ego, is just so good at hijacking the system. And without us realizing it, locking us into doing the same kinds of things over and over and over again, despite the fact that we're not getting any results that move us further down the path that we would like to be on. So, call in number is 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. What are your comments? What are your questions? What are your answers? What are your testimonials? What's an area that you'd like help framing out a worksheet or gaining a perspective that might help you see your situation slightly differently than the way you've looked at it the past countless number of times? Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Thanks for reading that worksheet over. I actually have in front of me not only that one, but your mental short version of the Reality Management Worksheet, which I don't know what version of my five-step you have, but I added all the breathing instructions from yours because I thought that was terrific, a slower downer like speed bumps or a reminder to come back to your breathing. Just come back to yourself. And I don't know if you have it in mind, but after every single instruction, or most of them, I added breathe. And I do think that's really important. And I liked your worksheet very much, too, because it was, I don't want to say anything offensive here, but it was not religious or obviously spiritual. It was a very practical, common sense, down to earth, not even using scientific terminology or anything that would not so much slow somebody down as discourage someone from going into the work, because the work is very simple. And so I thought your worksheet that you sent me and was really helpful. And I'm even thinking, with your permission, of using it side by side with the other one when I give that little talk in Kristen Ryman's group. To
sure.
Just say here are two, good, that's great, thanks. There are two ways of you know, there are two worksheets, and find the one that fits your personality more or your preferences more. Because this isn't meant in any way to stop anyone from doing the work.
Yeah,
and
it's,
another thing
it's interesting what'll get people triggered before you go on to your other thing, and that is, you know, the Dr. Bradley Nelson. There's some people that don't like his book Motion Code because he talks about, you know, it's a God thing, and say a prayer for divine guidance before you start every session, and that's just a huge turnoff for some people, and it's okay. It's a real turn on for some people. That some people absolutely love that, you know, someone like Dr. Nelson would be willing to acknowledge the divine, et cetera, and others find it the exact opposite. And what we're interested in is just finding enough different ways to present this work so that everybody's got options. Anybody can find a way to look at or develop a process or adopt a process that will assist them regardless of their biases or preferences.
Right.
So you were going to say another thing?
Very good. Only that sometimes when I've either been in a hurry or I'm so darn crabby about something that I don't even want to do a worksheet, I put my hand on it. This seems crazy, but it reminds me of a friend of mine. I put my hand on the sheet. It's like saying, all right, this is the most I can do. Put my hand on this sheet and somehow hope that it'll soak itself up through my palm and have an influence. And it has worked. It has helped even just to go into the vicinity of the worksheet when I'm very resistant. And I had a friend when I was very active in a very Anglo-Catholic Episcopal church in New Haven. Tim Bingham and I were very involved. We loved the high church liturgy combined with the politically very liberal. It was run by all kinds of artists and LGBT and all those variations on gender identification people. And it was a beautiful, beautiful traditional service. And I remember having a friend in there who would do a long prayer list every day of all the people in the parish who needed prayers and all of her friends and family who needed prayers. And I said, how do you do that? And she said, well, I have a confession to make. Some days I'm in a rush and all I do is put my hand on my list. And I thought, well, that's better than nothing. So I borrowed her technique. But I'm saying anybody out there who's feeling really resistant and crabby, just have the sheet nearby and glance at it or stick your big toe on it or put your hand on it, because that also breaks up the ice, the glacier of resistance that can be in there sometimes.
Well, especially, I would add, especially if they have some understanding of the fundamentals of the worksheet. And I would say, yep,
right,
you're unconscious and go to work and say, I don't really know what I need to release. I don't really know how to release it, but I'm willing.
Mm.
So we have this other hand up, so I'm going to turn on the microphone.
Yeah.
It might be Roma. Is this you?
Yes, it is. It is I. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I just wanted to contribute that I became aware of the emotion code and sought out a therapist here on the island of Maui to do it. And she and I used to use a pendulum, which would give us yes and no answers, distinctly yes and no answers. And that is what guided us through the chart. You know, that's how we would find our way to the exact problem. I like the fact that his work, you get down to the exact problem and then you simply clear it. So that was very helpful for me. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been a minister for 28 years, and that's been you know, my number one devotion and focus. But I realized yesterday when I was listening to you talk about the emotion code that it was trusting that intuitive guidance that the pendulum was doing for over 2 years that actually opened up a 24/7 awareness for me that had never been there before that I was in the presence of God. So for me, that was a huge thing. And that was distinct, that was specifically triggered, I realized, when I listened to you talk yesterday, by the emotion code and just giving it to trusting and letting it just simply guide me. So I just wanted to share that because, maybe somebody isn't religious, but I think by nature, we all have something spiritual in our nature. And, the 21st century is not, the time of religion is pretty much basically over. But I think most people walking on planet Earth know that they have a spiritual aspect to their nature. So, anyway, that's just my opinion.
All right. So
I'm
wrong. The emotion code?
Okay.
Are you still using the emotion code?
What did you say? What about the emotion code?
Are you still using the emotion code?
I don't need to. What I find is that most of the time I'm in an absolute neutral place. I'm not particularly upset and I'm not particularly happy, although basically what kind of hand in hand goes with that neutrality is a kind of peace and tranquility and delight and giggling and joy like a 5-year-old is constantly accessible to me. I mean, I can get so easily triggered to just laugh out loud. So what was your question?
You answered it.
Oh, okay.
So.
I'm in present tense. And so I'm happy. And I'm grateful because I know that, 28 years that I spent doing worksheets was like climbing a mountain, really, literally, climbing a mountain. And the worksheets are always there. They're beside my bed. And if I need one, which I did a couple of days ago, I took one out and used it and got over it, actually last night. So it's great to have tools.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, any other contributing points or comments from you, Susan, for Roma?
Well, it's good to hear your voice, Roma. I'm glad you're so happy. I need to borrow some of that.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
Yeah. I don't have any people in my life to distract me, and I know that that's situation that you have. You have many, many people.
Well.
Yeah.
Oh,
so, I'm almost never tempted or drawn away from that sense of center. So, by another consciousness. Yeah, I mean,
consciousness could do it.
But I also have to deal with a certain dimension of loneliness and isolation. I got my cat. She's right here. she's embracing the phone call right now. She jumped out the window and came over here because she's listening to your voice too. So.
Oh, we'll give her my love.
Animals
are good.
It's great to hear both of you. Thank you so much.
All right.
Aloha, everyone.
Blessing.
So, Dr. Tim.
There's Roma. Go ahead.
I read a wonderful thought from Guy Finley. I've gotten on his newsletter thing and sometimes have heard his webinars, although the timing isn't always great. He says, if your mind realizes or remembers that it is the source of suffering, it goes quiet.
Right. That's the only time it goes quiet.
Yeah.
When it realizes it's the source of your suffering, not the solution to it, that's the only time it goes quiet.
Right. I love the idea that it goes quiet. I'm not even sure that's true.
I was going to say, have you had that happen yet?
Not completely. I do love Walczak, what he says, though, Diedrich Walczak. He says, I might do this. How many times did he say? 150 times a day. I'll say, what am I feeling? It's my responsibility. And then he goes on from there. But talk about thwarting a trigger before it even gets a toehold. It's just so great that he'll go through his own worksheet many times a day, which is also an admission, but he's still triggerable. And I just appreciate, you know, somebody who's in trouble does get comfort from somebody else who's in trouble. I just love that he acknowledges that he may have to do it 150 times a day, but he does it.
Well, and, you know, if you listen to that interview that I did with him, you hear him talk about his life. And he's, you know, this is a very open, honest person who says, hey, I was in my 50s and I was planning how to kill myself. And I've had a tortured life from being born in a Japanese internment camp. And I had, you know, been using my intellect to make a success in business and basically torture myself otherwise in my relationships. I was drinking myself to death, et cetera. And so he was, you know, in his 50s or 50 years old when he was planning to die. And years before, he'd had somebody talk to him about the Course in Miracles, and he read a little bit of it, and he said, oh my God, there's too much God stuff in this, and he put it down and it would have nothing to do with it. But then when he was faced with a serious plan for how to end his life, he thought, well, maybe I should look at that book one more time before I go on and end my life. And this time when he read it, he didn't see the offensive language. He only got the message. And then because he was so bright intellectually and because he was so motivated, you know, to do this or die kind of thing, he began working with what he found in the Course in Miracles. And people that knew him said, wow, you are so different. What are you doing? And he would tell them. And by the end of that first year, he had a practice as a therapist, without any training as a therapist, just doing what he gained, what he distilled out of the Course in Miracles, which is now something he makes available absolutely free at his choose-again.org, choose-again.org .com, I'm not sure which one. But it's an absolutely similar process to the Michael Rice worksheets, because Michael Rice's work is informed by the Course in Miracles and the Kabor's manuscript. But he's very open about the fact that he's a wreck, as Guy Finley would say. He's a mess. He's just like everybody else. And he had a very, very tough life, and he was stuck in a self-abusive pattern for a lot of years. And so he's not anticipating that he's ever going to be done needing tools like this.
Yeah. What an amazing guy to come back from that far gone, and the amazing turnaround that he did. His wish to live must have been, I guess maybe that's just what we share as humans or all animals. We basically want to live. So some part of him was saying, wait a minute, before you cut your throat, just have a look at this big blue book again. Now, how did that happen? That's just the most amazing thing. But it helps to hear a story like that, because I realize there's an impetus in us that wants to live and heal that surpasses our awareness of our wish to heal. It's going to assert itself.
Well, and, you know, I was using this word yesterday quite a bit, willingness, right? Mm-hmm. He had to have the willingness to try something else. And literally, as though, you know, some people wouldn't think this, deciding to end my life is also trying something else, right? It's moving for a change. And
yeah.
He was willing to be willing to try something else at a whole different level, pretty drastic level, right, thinking about ending his life. But then he had a lot of us would call it grace, right, the gift of willingness to open up to something completely different that was a lot less drastic and a lot more loving in nature, because depending upon how you read it, The Course in Miracles and The Way of Mastery are very loving. They're very hopeful. And he was willing to look for that. He was willing to distill that message out of The Course in Miracles. And there are a lot of people that don't get that message from A Course in Miracles. And I like to talk about how we've, over the years when we would have the Tuesday support group and we would be, I think the whole first 10 years or so, most of what we did was Michael Rice's lectures. And we would watch an hour of one of his videos, and then routinely we would have people who were new to the group, and they'd come to the table after an hour of watching Michael Rice talk about how we're made of this stuff we call love, and everything about you is this energy of creation that some call love, and how to be more loving. People would come back to the table and say, I don't get it. Why is this guy so negative? Why is he harping? So what they were getting in their head, the impressions they were getting were very, very different than what most of us were getting from the same video, right? Which lets us know, I'm not really getting the impressions from the video. I'm getting my impressions of life from my past, from my biases and my traumas and my triggers and my upsets.
It's so true.
And there was something, you know, in the air, in the water, in Diedrich Wolzak that had him look at The Course in Miracles at that time and find the loving response, find the loving message.
I brings to mind, I did The Course in Miracles years ago when it was first coming out. And then after a few years, for some reason or other, I put it away and forgot about it. And about 5 years ago, maybe more now, I was running a church yard sale, and a woman unconnected with any knowledge that I had ever done The Course in Miracles, she wouldn't have any way of knowing, came up to me with this big blue book and said, I pulled this out of the pile of donations. I thought you'd be interested. It's still blowing my mind that about the timing of that, the miracle of her having no idea, and I hardly know this woman, handing me this book that I so needed right then. And that got me into the radio show and everything else. And it's just been
how did that get you into the radio show?
I'm not sure, and I wish I could remember the first time I called the show or how I learned about the show. But as soon as I called in, I knew this, and I knew there was a Course in Miracles connection with Michael Rice. But I can't tell you, Dr. Tim, I don't know, but it happened sort of in rapid sequence, one after the other. I also had shingles at the same time, and it was extremely in a bad way. Shingles, it wasn't even the physical part, although that was painful, nerve pain through my chest and belly and around to my back. And my son thought I was having a heart attack and sent me to the emergency room. And because the nerve pain was so sharp. But what was worse than the nerve pain was the fatigue and anxiety and depression. It's like all of my weaknesses popped to the surface because of the physical illness. And but it was a gift because that was hitting, that was like hitting bottom, and I thought, I don't want to be alive, and that's it. I just don't see any point, and I don't want to be alive. And then this blue book was handed me again, and Michael Rice showed up, and how does that happen? It's just such great things that can happen when you don't even know you're open. You're just a mess, as you said about Diedrich Walzak.
Yeah, it is interesting. It is, and Jung used to talk about synchronicity, meaning basically just the flow of life that most of us don't see. And when we wake up to it, we think, oh, my gosh, isn't that weird? Look at that coincidence. And
yeah,
and Jung is saying it's not a coincidence. It's a flow of life.
Right. There's that little saying that my sister-in-law used to say, a coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. I think that's pretty cute.
Yeah, it's cute. That's another way to anthropomorphize the divine.
Right. I know. You have a thing about that, don't you, Dr. Tim?
No, we do as humans. We anthropomorphize everything. Right. I mean,
I know.
How...
So you get mad about it, though.
Mad?
No, I shouldn't say you get. Well, you were really quick to jump on Thomas Merton the other day. I noticed. I hadn't
on what?
Thought about on the Thomas Merton prayer. You dismissed that pretty fast.
Well, I'm not dismissing it. I'm just pointing out that it is that anthropomorphized view. And there's nothing dismissive about it. It's a wonderful thing. It's the idea of asking. Now, who or what you ask is, you know, again, there's my interpretation. What's the
right.
image I have of who or what I'm asking? But if you listen,
right.
you know, over and over again, what I say is my work has gotten so much better when I just quit knowing and start asking and learn to live in the question, as Rilke would call us to do. Or, you know, as I understand that it's this prayer. So the ancient Aramaic word for prayer meaning to set a trap for God. In other words, to become receptive to what's already there. To get myself aligned like an antenna to what's already always there. And again, for me, that means putting a damper on or putting my conscious logical mind over there at the kiddie table with some Oreo cookies and milk and let it, you know, play out its thing without relying upon it for answers and asking another source, regardless of how you might personify it or conceptualize it, asking another source for a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly happens in that Thomas Merton prayer. I was not intending to be dismissive of it, but just to point out that for some people that would be a blatant metamorphizing, that, you know, creating human characteristics for the divine rather than just understanding what so many great spiritual traditions tell us. We can't even begin to conceive of the intelligence that is responsible for all of creation. And so every time we go to label it or personalize it, we are crunching it down into something that our conscious logical mind can comprehend rather than just staying open to the miracle and the mystery that goes way beyond the comprehension that's possible with language and or with this, what Michael Rice would call the 9-bit mind, the conscious logical mind. So it's not, in my way of viewing it, dismissive. It's inclusive. It's opening up and broadening it past what might be a personalization of the divine into something that is that and so much more.
Right.
And
it's
I think
a real
that's
relief.
What we, go ahead. What's a relief?
I just say it's a relief to step away from that personal part into not knowing and to staying open. It feels like a much wiser and safer place to be. You know, that's worthy of another whole discussion. But anyway, I like that idea.
Well, it's like it's the idea of Guy Finley says one of his primary spiritual teacher was Vernon Howard, and Vernon Howard used to say that to Guy Finley, "Guy, you keep talking about how you want to go to heaven. But let me ask you something, Guy. What kind of heaven would it be if you're there?" Right? So who and what I think heaven should be is so restrictive. I mean, it's completely dependent upon my personality and my training and my woes and my family experiences and what I understand of the language. And I had somebody in my office earlier today who was saying he's getting spiritual growth by watching a video, a set of videos about English as a second language. There's this teacher who's teaching and putting out videos on YouTube about English as a second language, and it's helping my client really get clear about how he uses different words and phrases at a, you know, psychological / spiritual level. Well, our language is so restrictive that every time we try to conceptualize, remember the story that Pierre Pradervan told? He was a young man, and he found this Christian sect, and he was so happy because they had the actual definition for God, and they taught it and they memorized it, and he had a friend whose father was an imam, and he said he was headed out to go have a talk with the imam and enlighten this imam about the true name of God. So he gets to this guy and he says, "So, you know, little pleasantries and nice day and all that good stuff. And I'm so glad to have your son as my friend, et cetera. Let me ask you something, Mr. Spiritual Teacher Imam. What does your Islam religion say about the name of God? What is the true name of God?" And the Imam said, "Well, what we say is that if you used every leaf and every branch on every tree as pens, and all of the water in all of the lakes and rivers and oceans as ink, and wrote forever, you would never exhaust all the names for the Creator." So compare that expansive infinitely open definition to what we do when we say, "I know what God is," or "I know who God is," and how language crunches it down into something that our tiny little minds can
right
comprehend. So we've done it. You've helped us get all the way through our first hour. So thank you, and thank you, Roma, for your comments. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Michael and Jeannie Rice.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you. Good conversation. So, we welcome everybody to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Tuesday, September the 7th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And Michael's outside working. He's listening, and I told him I would take off on the first part of the radio show. So we ended yesterday discussing some of the things that I cover in a Women Healing Women, or Healing the Whole Woman, intensive. And we talked about hormones and several other things, and I just was going to open the floor first and see if anyone had any questions or comments, if there's some people that are here on the radio show and you've attended one of the workshops, give us your input. And otherwise, we'll go in another direction. But I'll wait for just a moment and see if anybody has a question about the women's intensives or a question for me in general. And, okay, got a hand up. Hello, Ann. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. I just thought I'd throw a comment out since I went to your very first, the time, called Women Healing Women. And I mean, that's where I met Michelle, and I think Nancy Dock was down there, and then Magda. So, yeah, got to know those ladies. Anyway, and, you know, through the time. What I wanted to mention was, I didn't hear you mention yesterday, was at the end, I think it was towards the end of the intensive down there, where we lined up two columns and where
the
we
angel
walked
wash.
Through. And what did you call it?
The angel wash.
The angel. I knew angel was part of it. I couldn't remember. The angel wash. Yeah.
So it's like you're walking between everybody's lined up in two lines, and one at a time they walk through, and then everybody, you know, like kind of brushes them with the energy and whispers sweet things in their ear and just sends blessings. And yeah, it's an awesome, awesome time. I enjoy that.
Yeah, right. Because for those who haven't, you know, experienced something like that, for all the times over the years where, you know, I never got those positive, sweet comments. I mean, there was one other time when I was leaving out in Wyoming in the church that I was in, the people wrote on a note paper, and I kept those, and I came across those not too long ago, made positive comments about how they perceived, you know, me. And that was so profound. And so then your experience, physical experience like that was, you know, triggered all that. And I go, I don't know, it just kind of triggers the love that we are in there. And I guess over the years I hadn't got to experience that. And so for me, that was one of the great takeaways. I mean, there was all the, like you said, the comments about women things and, that we feel more comfortable in a, you know, women's setting. Although some of our intensives, they're mixed, you know, at Heartland and stuff. When you start to become safe and comfortable in your environment, hey, it can go anywhere. Those intensives could get intense as well. But there was something about just having the women and you know, feeling more comfortable. But anyway, so the angel wash, I thought that was profound. I just wanted to bring that up for any of those.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Let me throw something in here, Jeannie.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ann, just based on what you were saying, I think back to, and you weren't in this particular intensive, I don't think, but there were three or four women who had been sexually abused. And there was a man in the intensive, and one of the things he was there to work on was having sexually abused women and committed rape.
Mm-hmm.
And the four or five of them just went into such deep process, deep rage on both sides. He'd been sexually abused as a child. That all came up. Whew. I didn't expect emotion from me as I'm talking about this. It was so powerful. You know, the pain and trauma that drove his behavior, and these women were able to be the space for him, and he was able to be the space to receive their rage and their pain and move through it. And it's so profound when the space is safe enough to allow those kinds of energy dynamics. And most everybody, you know, goes around in their lives and covers it with rage and busyness and alcohol and drugs and food and, you know, all kinds of things. But just remembering that particular event was so, it was so powerful to just be in the space of these people who were, you know, as the world would call them, dire enemies, perhaps, and they were each able to tell the truth. And it was monumental. I don't know if there happens to be anybody listening who was part of that particular intensive, but if you were there, it would be interesting, you know, to see. I mean, that was probably, I don't know, 17 or 18 years ago now, but if you're out there and you happen to have been at that intensive, perhaps push one and share a little bit about how that looked for you. But it was, I mean, it's profound when the space gets safe enough.
Yes. But I do remember you mentioning that because I went through my experience at one, I think it was when my daughter was with me, you know, at the work intensive. And you,
right.
Because you had had that experience, though, you were able to say that, and it, like, you took on that male person to help forgive, you know, to say to me at the time because of the things that had happened to me. And so, again, that was helpful. So because of your experience, it helped me to get through a portion of my issue with that as well. So, again, yeah, it's the snowball thing. It just continues to help and to heal. Anyway, yes, thank you.
It can be really powerful when we have a surrogate, someone who's willing to stand in for that person who perhaps has never, at least in our imagination, could never open to that. When someone says, okay, I'll take the role temporarily and go ahead and open and unload. And when that starts to happen, people are often shocked at what they find inside. Well, I knew I was mad about it, but I didn't know I had murderous rage in me. And to allow that to come forward, you know, full blown right there, and know that this person is never going to be triggered again so deeply that they might murder someone. It's pretty powerful.
Yes, absolutely. As so much of being an intensive is powerful. Yes. Thank you so much, both of you, for what you do. And Dr. Kim.
Honored and delighted, young lady. Okay, I'm going to turn back over to Eugene.
Thank you, Ann. Appreciate you. Mm-hmm. So we have another hand up. It's area code 423. You are on the air. Who do we have?
Wanda.
Hi there. How are you, Wanda?
I don't know. This is my first time to ever be on this. And I have just purchased one of the Avison machines. I've only had it 5 days.
Right.
And Dr. Rice will discuss that today.
Okay.
About it.
Michael? Give him just a moment. He's outside, so it may take him a minute to switch over and turn on his mic.
Yes, I'm out here shoveling 2 tons of compost into the garden as I'm listening. So you have some questions, Wanda, about the Avison?
Yes, I just wondered what information you could give, or if you could direct me on the computer where I can find the information.
Okay. I'll tell you what, if you do you have any specific questions? You've got the machine now. Have you plugged it in?
I've
have you turned it
machine.
On?
I've got the machine. I'm using it on myself and my son. Both of us have had COVID. He had the COVID disease, which I had never heard of before, but that's what they told
right.
me he had. And he was in intensive care, and it was touch and go for the first 3 or 4 days because I guess he had had it over a week when he went into the hospital, and his oxygen levels were like down in the 70s to high 60s sometimes in 70s.
Wow.
But then I came down with it several days after he was in the hospital. Fortunately, I had oxygen here at home, and I did not have to go to the hospital. But it's definitely an experience to remember.
Yeah, how far out of the hospital is he? It sounds like he probably had pneumonia, and they probably treated him with antibiotics.
He had double pneumonia, and get this, they sent him home from ICU with no antibiotic, that just oxygen. And less than a week, we had to take him back to the ER, and his lungs were still a mess. So they gave him the prednisone dose pack and an antibiotic, and I'm not sure what antibiotic it was. And he is doing much better. He can get up and walk, and his oxygen level will drop. But he can ride in the car. He's getting out, and we just praise God. It's a miracle.
No, well, hold the space. What's his level of oxygen? What's his blood oxygen?
When he's sitting, it's 95 and above. But if he gets up and like goes to the bathroom, it can drop down into the high 80s. But then when he gets back down and sits there for just 2 or 3 minutes, it's back up to 95.
Oh, good. Well, that's awesome that he's back to that level. That says his lungs are probably come back into pretty good shape. Well,
yeah.
My input would be that you start him on the Avacyn, you know, just doing 10 minutes, maybe twice a day. And
yeah,
we've
already had. We're doing 30 minutes now.
Okay, and he's handling that okay?
Yes.
Perfect.
I definitely feel like it's improved my breathing, and I'm hoping that it will improve my aches and pains, but I think that probably is going to take a while.
Yeah, it takes time to open the circulatory system and get the oxygen nutrition into the cell to rebuild the cell and also to pull the excessive waste out of the cell that have been building up in the cell because of a lack of circulation. So if he's up to 30 minutes twice a day, then, you know, do that for a couple of days. And then he could do 3 times a day, even 4 times a day. I have one fellow who bought a machine, and he had been through, I don't even remember how many back surgeries. His mother actually lived in California, and he was in Arizona. And he could not even get in the car to drive to see her. She was in her 90s, and he couldn't get in the car. And he was doing 6 hours a day on the Avacyn. And finally, after about 3 weeks of that, he was able to get in his car and drive to California, pain-wise.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
And COVID, you know, my understanding is that COVID is at least a great part of it is vascular, and what the Avacyn does is it opens and improves the microcirculation. And if you'd like to, you know, basically two things, there are three major things that are happening when you put your hand in the Avacyn. Basically, for those who don't know what we're talking about, it's a device about the size of a bread box. You put your hand in it and you turn it on, and a cuff tightens around your wrist. You've got a mitt on your hand, so the cuff seals well. It's kind of like a blood pressure cuff, only not as hard, not as tight, and it pumps down and creates a vacuum, which distends the blood vessels in the hand and brings more blood into the hand. There's a heat exchanger in the palm of the hand, and basically what happens is you put your hand in that machine and you put it on a small hot plate that diffuses heat into the bloodstream. And once you start raising the temperature of the blood, the first thing that happens, you know, it's a class 2 medical device, that, and the medical claims that can be made for it, approved by the FDA, are one, relaxation. The first thing that happens is once the blood warms up by a degree or so, you know, the blood in the palm of your hand, when it leaves your hand, goes to the body, circulates around, and in about 3 minutes, it's back in the palm of your hand. So once you do that 10 minutes, three times around the body, the whole body has the whole blood supply has its temperature raised by about 1 degree. And what that does, first of all, at the head of each of the capillaries, the only way that oxygen and nutrition get into a cell is through capillaries, which are blood vessels about the tenth the width of a hair. And at the head of each of 60 billion capillaries in each of our bodies, there's a thing called a precapillary orifice. It's a set of muscle fibers at the head of the capillary that, when the body wants to shut circulation down, tighten and close that opening. If people live in a fear-based world and an uptight world and what they call a sympathetic nervous condition, where the sympathetic nervous system is their dominant state, then those muscle fibers tend to be locked up and tight and blood can't get into the capillary. When you start pouring warm blood over it, those muscle fibers warm up and they soften, they open, they relax. And that creates a bigger opening for blood to enter into the capillaries. And then when the blood is warmed by a degree or so, the red blood cell itself is larger than the opening into the capillary. And it has to be able to flex itself. And if we, you know, with a sad diet, you know, we're eating out of McDonald's and fast food, and which means we're taking in a ton of junk oils, or we eat a lot of prepared foods, then the red blood cell tends to become inflexible. And in order to get into the capillary, that red blood cell has to be able to bend or flex itself. It's called erythrocyte deformability. And erythrocyte just means red blood cell, and deformability means I can bend. But when you warm that red blood cell by that 1 degree, all of a sudden it can start to flex and get into that capillary opening with those relaxed muscles fibers around the head of the capillary. And then once the body's temperature, the blood temperature is up by 1 degree, the hippocampus says, oop, we need to cool this down. We need to throw off this heat. And you know, you can get similar benefits from sitting in a bath of hot water for an hour, going out and running for an hour, sitting in an infrared sauna, but you get all sweaty and it's kind of messy. And what happens is the way that the body, when it gets hot from running a sauna or hot water, is that the water beneath the surface of skin warms up, comes to the surface, and evaporation cools the body down. Well, the Avacyn is specifically designed so there's no sweat response. And so when the brain says, I need to cool down, what it does is it opens all of the periphery circulation and the circulation into the organs. So it dumps that heat by opening those blood vessels, so it's still another level. So now you're getting a full supply of oxygen-rich blood and nutrition into the cell, and the removal of acidic carbon dioxide and wastes, and the cell is able to strengthen and rebuild itself. And at least one medical doctor offers the theory that if you've got a 5% deprivation of oxygen to a cell, the cell's in excruciating pain, and that's why the second medical claim that the FDA allows for the Avacyn is for pain management, because once you start to get that oxygen into the cell, it stops screaming in pain. It makes a profound difference in how it operates. So I build up to three times a day with both him and yourself, even four times a day if there's time for it. And of course, one of the other major benefits, you know, a predictor of how long we're going to live is how well we sleep and how long we sleep. And most people, when they put their hand in the Avacyn, almost instantly go to sleep. And the reports I've gotten back from people are, my sleep has improved so much. Now, there's one sleep researcher who talks about the importance of sleep. And he says there's a global experiment that's been going on for years, and it's called daylight savings time. And what they've shown over the years statistically is that losing that hour sleep when the clocks, you know, take away an hour, the next day there's a 23% increase in heart attacks all around the globe where they do daylight savings. And then the reverse, when the clocks go the other way and people gain that hour of sleep back, all around the world, there's a 21% decrease in heart attacks. So the importance of sleep to health and aliveness is so important. So I make sure that one of those sessions that he does and that you do is last thing at night. In fact, you can just have it on the side of the bed and go to sleep. You don't just let it run and let your hands stay in it. And then when it shuts off, sooner or later through the night, you'll take your hand out, but it tends to enhance sleep just immeasurably. If you want to drop Jeanie, Jeanie, at whyagain.org, an email with your email address in it, I'll send you back a video that I did an introduction. It's about an hour and a half introduction to the Avacyn, and an article that is not finished yet, but I'm working on, that kind of lays out what I see as how it's operating, what it's doing, and then the experiences that several people have had in changing what's going on in their bodies and their minds. Another thing that happens with it is emotional traumas tend to flush out. What I've come, the core of this work that we do, why is this happening to me again, is forgiveness. That is the removal of energetic patterns that don't belong. And what I've come to see is the Avacyn is literally a physical form of forgiveness. It physically vitalizes the structure to be able to forgive, to remove, to throw off what doesn't belong. And we've watched a lot of people with great emotional trauma and turmoil and even depression, and the depression lessens and disappears. The emotional turmoil tends to disappear. So it's pretty powerful to watch the changes that happen for people.
Okay, thank you. I have one more question. Does
yes.
this influence weight loss in any way?
Say it again.
Does the Avacyn influence weight loss in any way?
Many people report that their weight reduces when they use the Avacyn, and I think it's because what happens is when you're getting oxygen in throughout the whole structure and nutrition where it hasn't been, the body isn't saying, I'm hungry, 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 give me, feed me, because it reaches the level where it realizes it's got the nutrition that it needs, and the apostat shuts down and hunger stops. So yes, there have been several people who've reported. Jeannie's actually done a program. She's added to the Avacyn, but since she started using it, I don't know, where are you at now, Jeannie? 23, 24 pounds you've taken off?
Yeah, 24.
You're doing,
and it's 24. All, it's kind of like this work. It's just more mental. It doesn't change your diet. It doesn't, force you to exercise or anything like that. But it just totally changes the way you view your body and food. And
the perfect adjunct. And if you want information on that, just put that in the email to Jeannie, and she'll send you some information and a link that will give you a 14-day free trial on that program, and it will support us as well. So.
Okay, great. Could you tell me that one more time? Because I'm using the Avacyn as your
sure.
talk. And
okay.
my other hand is broken things, so I can't write.
Do okay.
you? I tell you what, do you receive text on this phone?
Yes.
I'll just text you. I'll text you.
I'll have to. This is my house phone, so I don't receive text on it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
then go ahead and send the email. Jeanie at
okay.
whyagain.org. Jeannie at whyagain.org. Cool.
Okay.
Awesome. And any questions, feel free to be in touch. When we get that email back to you, I'll include my phone number. If you have any more questions about the Avacyn, I'll be there to support you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Blessings, Juana. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, Miss Jeannie, it's all yours. I'm going to go back to the shovel.
Okay. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue. And we would love to talk with you. We would like for this to be your show instead of a monologue. Yesterday, we were talking with Susan about the women's intensive, and I was answering some questions about that. We talked about several things. If there's anybody that has listened to yesterday's show and you have additional questions, I'd be glad to answer them. And I appreciate the push in the direction of contemplating doing an online women's intensive. I had talked about it before, but then the conversation yesterday, plus day before yesterday, I started writing in my book again. And so all of that just seems to kind of be culminating into this is probably the next thing that I need to do. So I do appreciate the push in that direction. And I'll be glad to answer any questions that you have. I know that several people, Susan, welcome back. How are you?
Yeah, that was good.
Hey.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, that was good. In fact, it's led to another question I have, and this is way out of probably anybody's parameters, but Kim and I have been reading about youth in Afghanistan who have left the country either by escaping by themselves or being sent by frightened parents who want at least to have their children safe. We have a refugee center in my church, and we teach English as a second language. But now Tim and I are considering, and I mean just the basic beginning thinking about fostering one or two Afghanistani children. They'd be 13 to 18 years old, and the commitment is big. You keep them until they're 21, at which point I don't know what happens. I guess they're considered adults and should be on their own or something. But I was wondering if anyone in our listening community had ever done anything like that. Of course, it triggers a lot of fears, and Tim and I are both retired and introverts, and the idea of having a couple of teenagers in the house, and that probably would be better to have more than one so that they'd, I assume, be speaking the same language so they'd have company while we learned how to communicate with them. But I know this is far-fetched, but it comes under the umbrella of parenting and motherhood and all that stuff. So
that's awesome.
I personally don't know of anybody who's done that, but I think that's awesome. Go ahead, Michael.
Well,
and you know, the other thought that comes is perhaps bringing the forgiveness process to that community as well, because the amount of trauma and pain that those folks are carrying just in this insanity.
Tremendous. It's tremendous.
It's just, wow.
I know. Can't imagine. And, of course, you know, I have a whole, already well in place, a whole capacity to generate terrible scenarios and scary scenes of delinquency and mental health problems and rebelliousness and rage, and who knows what these kids have been through. So I might need you guys more than ever on the radio show myself, but even to start, we have this language. They probably speak Parsi or Arabic or I don't know what language, certainly not a language I've ever learned, you know. There are support services that come with it, caseworkers, and we have our refugee center, which has been shut down again, by the way. COVID in Pennsylvania is over the acceptable numbers. So church has now gone back on Zoom, and the refugee center had just opened its doors. We had two sessions, I think, and then they shut us down again. Oh, but I have to tell you this neat thing that we're doing. Every year in my parish, we have run what we call a tossed and found sale, which is parishioners and friends bring in every kind of thing that they don't want. It's a huge yard sale. And we end up doing pretty well with it, but we end up almost giving away the stuff. So this year, we thought we would just plain give it away and forget about asking for money. We'd have little bins around for donations and if people wanted to do that. But basically, we're collecting stuff to give away, and we're doing it even though we're shut down, which means one of two things. We can run it out on the church lawn if the weather holds, or Somebody will stand as a sentry at our church door and let in 10 people. We're allowed to have 10 masked people in at a time. They come in, pick over the stuff, get thrown out, and the next pile comes in. But with this influx of refugees, there are people who have nothing. They're just coming with the clothes on their backs and a duffel bag or something, and that's it. So we're trying to find, sort of it's like redistribution of wealth. We all have, in this country, we all have so much more than we need. Right, Jeannie? You always talk about your clutter issue.
Right.
So nice. People have a place to unload the stuff. So we're swinging into action, even though we really don't know from one day to the next what's going to happen. Although the diocese is funny, not funny, but they say, once you've been shut down, you have to be 2 weeks in a safe zone before you can open. And, of course, within those 2 weeks, your numbers could go back up. So, anyway, this is just, I'm giving you a state of the union message from Allentown, Pennsylvania.
And I just looked it up real quick, and Farsi is the language. There's about 50 languages in Afghanistan, but Farsi is one. And the book is translated into Farsi.
Oh, wow. It is? Oh, that's great.
Yep.
That's,
yeah, there was a woman several years ago in Tehran, and somebody had given her the worksheets, and she's like, this is changing my life. I need to translate it so our people have it. And she translated. Actually, it was interesting because when she first translated it, wasn't safe. If I remember how the scenario unfolded, it wasn't safe for her to put her name on it. You know, we acknowledged the translator. And then, I don't know, a year or so went by. She said, it's okay, you can put my name on it. That, you know, it was safe to do that. And then I don't know how long it was, a year or two later, she said, take my name off it. It's not safe anymore. But, yeah, Farsi is one of the languages that the book has been translated into. So
I wonder if it's
awesome.
Available. Has it been printed?
You can download
it's on
it free
our
online.
Website for free.
In Farsi?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Oh,
yeah, just
my
go
God.
To the book. That's... Go to the home page where the book is. Click on the book, mm-hmm. and then just drill down,
okay.
and you'll see all the translations. Click on Farsi, and there it is. You can just download it and print it yourself at home. It's never been printed as such officially.
Yeah. Well, that's all right. I mean, we have a printer as long as we have power over here. Yeah, there are only a few requirements, as we know so far. These kiddos have to have access to a mosque, and we do have two mosques near here, one Shiite and one the other one. Anyway, the two different Muslim expressions within striking distance, and evidently those mosques have programs for kids too, so we're picturing that they will have a kind of social life through that we wouldn't be able to provide, but we would be able to make sure they get a driver's license if they're of age and help them take the test and all that sort of thing. But this is, Tim and I are just in the shaking at your boots, looking at it stage. We're nowhere near saying yes. And my son has made us promise not to make this decision without his input. He and his wife couldn't possibly do this, but they have our grandson Charlie, who's still at home for 2 more years, and it would be wonderful to have access to a known teenager who could maybe mix with these guys too. The ratio of boys to girls is 30% girls coming over and the rest boys. Anyway, yeah, that's wonderful. That would give us a way to link with them. I have your book in English, and we could imagine it looks sort of similar, or who knows what it looks like. I'll check it out. Thanks a lot, guys.
I'll send you the direct link as well.
Thanks, Jeannie.
So, Michael, do you have anything else on that? Oh, he said no, but he hollered it through the door, so I think he's in the process of digging and can't unmute his button.
So, though, that's okay.
He handed off the hosting of the show to you today, huh?
Yeah, we rented a U-Haul trailer, the flatbed type things, not the box. And we have a landfill area that they compost, and they said that it's organic and it's leaves and grass, and it's been, you know, composted. It's beautiful. I mean, it's black as it can be and super cheap. And so we went up there with the flatbed wagon this morning and got a couple tons of compost. And so he's shoveling it out of the wagon into the garden because we'll have to take the wagon back. And
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So it's, but it's beautiful earth.
Radio, so. Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
My God. So, good for you guys. So it sounds like if you're there for the foreseeable future, huh?
Yeah, as long as my dad's still hanging in, you know, we'll be here, and COVID, we're not planning on opening up Heartland or traveling. And it's working out really good to do the online intensives and workshops, and you know, he's even speaking at churches, and he's speaking at the Divine Science Conference this year, and all of that stuff is being done by Zoom, and so it works out really well to be able to do things differently, and then to also be here to take care of Aria and Dad.
That's so good. So, well, I had a question for Michael. My husband's doctor has recommended CBD oil for anxiety, and it's impossible to find out much of anything online because there's so much for sale. I wondered if Michael had ever worked with that.
He's actually dropped off the phone right now, but I can tell you that I have used CBD oil, and I also have used it with my dad. And now what we've got does not have the THC in it, which is, you know, the component of it that can create issues and you can get hooked on it and all that. So it what we're using does not have that in it. But we use it for, you know, Dad's pain. There's two different kinds. One of them's for pain relief and the other one is for sleep. And so we have used both of those.
Do you recommend them, and what kind if you do?
There's a company called Cili. It's C-I-L-I, and that's who I have bought it from. And it comes in, it's really weird. It's about the size of a credit card. It's kind of flat, and it's a pumper, and it has quite a few sprays, and you only spray like 8 or 9 sprays in your mouth, and you hold it for a little while and let it kind of, you know, absorb into the tissues, and then you swallow it. And, you know, got a decent flavor, and so I can send you the link to that as well. I know that there are a lot, even here in our little town, you know, here in the mountains, there's probably a CBD store on every other corner. It's crazy. And, do they have pure ingredients? You know, where are they getting it? What's included in it? So this company, you know, I knew the people that were involved in it. And, you know, it's a multi-level thing, but I don't do that. I just order the product. And so I can send you the information on that. I think it's pretty good.
Great. That's a lot of help because we didn't know where to start. And we do have a store nearby. It looks a little shady, though. It's like it's a tattoo parlor and a and a vaping center. And I think, holy mackerel, this looks a little scary.
There's actually a couple of stores around here that are now selling, they call it Delta H, and it's the product that does have THC in it. I'm not sure how. I guess because marijuana is now legal, you can grow it and you can be, you know, you can carry, like, I don't know, an ounce of it without it being an issue or whatever, as long as you're not smoking while you're driving. So it's, when I think back of when we moved to this town, you know, the stores weren't even open on Sunday, and there were no liquor stores, and how much things have changed. It's just, it's amazing.
Right. That's so true.
And now we're getting a casino here, and it's like, how in the world?
Wow. Well, that is very interesting.
Yeah.
Good grief. So we'll...
But I don't know if you were on when I was saying thank you for the push. I've actually gotten kind of a second excitement, I guess, on doing a women's intensive online. You know, Michael's been trying to get me to do it, and I've been saying, yeah, when things kind of calm down a little bit, you know, maybe.
Yeah, I know.
So now I'm kind of excited about it. So I think I'm going to go ahead and schedule one in the spring when Michael's, whether he does the teacher's training or the laws of living, when that's over, then I'll do it.
Yeah.
Women's right behind it.
That's great.
Yeah. So thank you.
Can I ask you how the
sure.
You're welcome. My pleasure. I was going to ask you how that discussion we had ages ago about clutter, inward and outward clutter, and how's that all going?
I have slowly, you know, gone through, like, Mom was just a number one hoarder, and Dad wasn't too far behind her, and there's just so much stuff. And so after we moved in here, after she passed away, and slowly going through, you know, it's like I didn't feel like I could just get rid of a lot of things because I didn't want Dad to, you know, get upset or whatever, you know, that
right.
all of her stuff was going out the door. And so a lot of times when he's at my brother's house, I get the opportunity then to go through and get rid of some more boxes and things like that. It's, we can move around in here now. And so it's much better. And then we've, you know, done several things, changes to the house, got central air and heat, which they never had. And
wow, great. And good for your dad too.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually 2 weeks from, not this coming Friday, but in 2 weeks, they're coming to, convert his bathtub so that he can just step into it. And so that'll help too, because he's getting, you know, occupational therapy is no longer coming. So it's up to me to bathe Dad. And
wow.
It gets a little challenging sometimes to get his legs up and over into the bathtub, even though we have a transverse seat for him to sit on. You know, it's,
yeah.
So this will make it a whole lot easier too.
Wow, Jeannie. You are burning
challenges
the candle
in lots of corners.
Oh, my God. You're like the sandwich generation, but it's a double-decker because you're doing a grandkid, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
She is so good for him, though, because the other day, you know, she just turned 3. And the other day she was sitting at the table with Dad, and they were playing with dominoes, and they, you know, not playing the game, but just playing with them, building things and stuff. And he played with her for an hour. It was just so sweet, you know.
That's wonderful. Right. That is so good.
Yeah.
Good for her.
I said, yeah, there's not very many children that grow up and get to spend quality time with their great-grandparent. And so it's, she gets a little confused, though. Like Michael came in a while ago and said something to Daddy, and he calls him Papaw. That's what Ryan and Gabby call him. And she looked at him. She said, "You're Papaw." Like, don't you know who you are?
Right.
Because he called my dad Papaw, and that's what she calls Michael, his Papaw.
Yeah.
So she
it.
Thought he got real confused.
Right. But she doesn't live with you, right?
No,
your
we have her 3 days
her
a week. Like, yeah, Ryan will bring her over. This morning she got here about 7:15, and we'll take her home at about 5 o'clock. So it's like 10-hour days, you know, 3 days a week.
Wow.
So, now, this week, we only had her yesterday and today, so we'll have 3 days off before we have her again. And next week, my dad will actually be going to my brother's house. We'll take him on Monday and then pick him back up on Saturday. So that made me think I need to ask Michelle if she can cover switchboard Monday because I'll be driving the car.
Oh,
so,
boy, yeah.
anyway.
Well.
And I thought what I might do is, you know, they recorded one of the women's intensives I did, this one girl's a photographer. And so I did an exchange with her that she could attend the intensive free of charge, but she had to video the whole thing and then help me edit. And
wow.
So I've got like 40 hours of video. And
wow.
So I might go through and pull an hour of that and play it next Monday as kind of the fill-in and give people a feel of what a women's intensive is like.
That's a great idea.
Oh, yeah.
So, Jeannie, when I call and I'm yakking about this, that, and the other thing, can I ask you to look at the switchboard? And if somebody's hand goes up, I will
absolutely.
Step back. Good.
I'll be glad to.
I made that
and right now there's no
too.
Other hand up. So.
Okay, good. This isn't, you know, this is just practical because one thought comes after another and other people wouldn't. I've heard often people say, I pressed one at the beginning of the show, but Susan Bingham was on the whole time. I don't want to get into that thing, that sort of thing. But I had a question for you and Michael, and this is a personal and selfish question. Do you remember at all when or how I connected with you guys at the beginning of our connection?
You know, I don't. It just seems like you've been part of us forever.
Well, it's been a long time, but I was thinking about the fact that years, I was telling this to Dr. Kim, years ago, I did the Course in Miracles when it was first published. And then after several years of running groups and you know, being very involved with the workbook, I think I did it for 3 years or so, and I put it away and I forgot about it. Then some years ago, I got sick with shingles, and the shingles itself was the least of it, but what came with the shingles was severe return of anxiety, depression, and fatigue. Insomnia, it seemed as if the shingles just knocked me sideways. And I was feeling really not like being alive. And I was putting together this yard sale for my church that I just mentioned, which is going to be a giveaway this year. And a woman I hardly know pulled a book out of the donations of books and brought it to me and said, I thought you'd like this. And it was The Course in Miracles.
That's amazing.
And I felt as if I was being spoken to and saved. I said, how did you know that? She said, I don't know. I just got this feeling that you'd like this. She didn't know I'd ever done it or anything, but I took that book and I dove in. At about the same time, somehow I found out about Michael's show. And I think I knew at the time that it was connected with the Course in Miracles, and I needed it. And so that's as much of a miracle to me as the woman giving me the book. You guys showed up in my life when I didn't have even much of a toehold on my life, and you put me back together. And I just, Tim Hayes said, well, how did you get in touch with Michael? And I can't remember, and you can't either, so that's fine. I suppose if I really wanted to get curious, I could go through the archives or something, but I have no patience for that, you know. But
right.
I just thought you might remember. Yeah, it's probably been 6 or 7 years now, maybe more because time goes so fast.
I know. It's and this year has just flown. It's like I have no idea where the year is.
I know. Do you think that's partly because it's been so, in some ways, monotonous because we are limited in our movements? And so when things are the same, they're not demarcated in certain ways, and so they kind of fold in on each other? Or is it
yeah,
just...
Yeah, it could be. It's,
yeah.
I have, like, certain things, like, you know, like next week was kind of a marker, you know, and once we planned it, it's like, okay, 3 more weeks and dad's going to my brother's. 2 more weeks and dad's going to my brother's, you know. So it's kind of a marker of time.
Oh, right, right.
So, yeah.
I should come down there and help you pack boxes. I really like doing that.
Do you? Well, after...
the opportunity.
One of the things that I did after she passed was she had things in the floor. I mean, everywhere that you couldn't even walk. And I bought probably 15 of these big tubs from Walmart. And yeah. I would just go through, and if it was something having to do with artwork, because she did everything from quilting to needlepoint to crocheting to painting, you know, so if it had anything to do with her crafty stuff, it went in a certain box. If it was just clothes and, you know, I didn't know anybody that could wear it or whatever, then it went into the Salvation Army box or the Goodwill box. And so I kind of went through and did one room at a time and just would kind of create a path. But then what's happened is we've got them all cleared except downstairs in the den, and there's a section of the den that's kind of unusable because there's a big it's like a wood burning stove that sits out in the middle of the floor, you know, and they haven't used it in years. And so on either side of that, I've got boxes stacked up. And so what I need to do now is, when Dad's not here, is kind of get rid of the boxes. And
yeah,
you know, I've written, as I've gone through stuff, like we turned one of the, it used to be my dad's office, but I mean, he doesn't even write checks or anything anymore. So I turned that into a pantry. And so as we were going through and we were getting rid of stuff and putting shelves in, I would send pictures to my brothers and I said, all right, I found this. Do you want it? And
oh, yeah.
Or I would find Christmas gifts, you know, that the boys had bought them and they were still in the original box. It had never been opened or used. And I'd say, do you want them back? And they were like, no. So, you know, a lot of that then just went on.
Yeah. Wow, what a huge task. Is it hard for you? I mean, does it bring back memories and attacks of nostalgia?
I run across some things and it's like, oh, wow, this is awesome and I'll keep it, you know, or I'll put it in. Like I found my mom and my grandmother's ration stamps when the war was going on. And,
oh, my God.
You know, so I kept those and I found – she had the baby bracelets when all of us were born, you know, with their names on them and things like that. But it was funny when I was packing things up and going through and getting things settled. The one time I can remember that it really hit me hard and I broke down, I was in Walmart buying more plastic boxes to put stuff in. And I put the boxes in the cart and then I just stood there and cried. You know, it's just it's just kind of weird that it would hit me at that point and not when I was packing stuff. But
that's how it is, though.
Yeah, yeah. Just going through motions and.
Wow. Were you close to your mother?
It was funny because, you know, we argued and things like that when I was a teenager. She was super strict and wouldn't let me, you know, do anything. I mean, when I went out for cheerleading one year and I made it, but I didn't go out anymore after that because all the other cheerleaders' outfits were, you know, halfway up their thighs and mine was down 3 inches below my knees. And
yeah.
I wasn't allowed to wear shorts or pants. Couldn't go to movies, couldn't go to dances, couldn't wear makeup, you know, so it was like super strict. And so I rebelled.
Yeah.
I got married when I was 16 years old, but when I jumped right into the fire, because that was the, you know, 3 years of physical abuse. But yet when it got down to the wire, she stood by me no matter what. And
oh boy.
Then in 2017, she came to my women's intensive.
Whoa.
Yep.
What was that?
It was awesome. Goodness. It really was. But
and you didn't feel sort of constrained or shy or anything? You just
no, not really. I had already at that point let Mom read a couple books in a couple chapters in my book, and because a lot of it's, I do kind of a timeline. And I said, you know, I started with my childhood, and one of the things I talked about was always feeling like I was in competition with my older brother.
And so anyway, she was reading it and she's like, well, you've got your timeline right, but I can't do anything about you thinking you weren't loved or something like that, you know.
Oh,
and,
man.
So, you know, we had already had the opportunity to share and open up, and she shared some things that she had gone through growing up. And so it was a healing opportunity for both of us. So at times she was my best friend, and then other times she was just my mom, you know, so it came and went. But I was glad we had gotten closer and had some closure, I guess, before she died.
Right. How was her death? Was it an easy death, and was she old?
It was insane. It was like I had talked to her. She didn't feel well. She had Daddy take her to the hospital. And they ran all these tests, and they said she wasn't having a heart attack, and they were going to keep her overnight and do a stress test the next morning. And so Michael and I were actually in Michigan, and we're doing a workshop, and I called her before I went to the workshop, and I said, you know, now you study hard so you can pass that test tomorrow, you know, and was just teasing with her. And she had made Daddy go home because she didn't want him driving after dark. And, you know, so we chatted for just a little bit, and then I went to the workshop, and when the workshop was over, it was about 10:15 or 10:30 that night, Daddy called me and said she was gone.
Whoa, genie.
I mean, it was like, I think she just chose to leave.
Yeah.
And, you know, because they said that it wasn't a heart attack or anything, but they when Dad got to the hospital, they said her heart just stopped. That it wasn't like it slowed down or she went into any agony or anything. It was just like she was alive and then she wasn't.
Whoa. How old was she?
Yeah, she was 83.
Oh, okay. I always calculate, well, so that gives me that gives me 6 more years.
Hey, listen, cancel that. You've got 2,500 more years.
I know Michael talks about meeting in 49, but
right.
I have a lot of feelings about that. Like, if I can't get all my beloveds in there with me, then I don't want to show up at that party. I want to go the other route. So anyway,
I posted something on Facebook yesterday that I actually reposted it. Somebody else had put it out, and it was about how to stay present and wait if you were with someone when they die, and the transition period and the glory of being in that moment with them. And it was a really nice article, so I put it on my Facebook. I reposted it.
Oh, good. That's lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tim and I used to volunteer at hospice, and that was a very special time. If we were with a patient who was heading out and then head out, we would do a little like sitting shiva or something. I don't know the tradition, but we would. It was a very, very, what's the word? It was as if it was a thin atmosphere that we were almost on the other side with them, kind of.
Right. It's like you're present when the door opens and they walk through.
Yeah. And one of our closest friends, she was alone by the time she was dying. She was only 76, but she just didn't want to be around. We put her in hospice because she just was failing. And it wasn't long before she was heading out. And we were working there as volunteers. So I was sitting with her, and she said, would you please move? And she sounded very crabby. And I said, sure, Joe. What? Why? And she said, because my mother's there and you're blocking her. Well, this was a 76-year-old woman who had said goodbye to her mother long ago. And mom showed up at the bottom of the bed and was standing
there.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Isn't that sweet? And so I said, she said, my mother's here. I said, oh, good. Well, I'll have her sit down or whatever we said. And she just, and then she lived the night, and her kids came by, and Tim did this gorgeous thing. She was not in communication with two of her children, I think it was, and Tim flew them in. They showed up the night before she died at her bedside, and she was fully conscious, and they cried and hugged and made up. And
awesome.
I think that's one reason she could die so peacefully the next day, but she just plain